This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Max Delight shot through, grabbed the lead. Max Delight wins it.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Very elegant. 10 group ones. And now the greatest of them all, the Melbourne Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Indeed we are. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy 2022. A lot has transpired since we last did our Cracking the Codes show live. The racing has been as good as ever in all three codes, and we've got lots to catch up on. Simone Fisher, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Dan, and a happy new year to you. And also good morning to you, Matt, and happy new year to you also. And yes, there has been lots of good racing, hasn't there? I feel like we've been apart for so long, so it's going to be a little bit like a reunion this morning, I think, and catch up on all the racing that we've missed out on.
Yeah, it seems like a long time. What's gossip, Simone? Come on, you're the gossip queen. What's happening? What's gossip?
Oh, I don't know if there's really a lot of gossip, is there? I'm not one to gossip, Matt. I think you're usually the one with the ear to the ground, aren't you? You come up with the little things, but
actually, yeah, Dan, you and I are probably pretty much the gossip queens of this show. So what have we got?
Don't bring me into it. Obviously, Simone needs a couple of gins before she gets active in that area, but it's probably too early in the morning to do that. Now, you're the man with, and Simone, I think, hit the nail right on the head there. You are the man. You actually get paid for that sort of stuff, so you're the one that should know. Look, in a way, dodged a few bullets as far as this COVID situation where it's transpired too. I think, government clearly mismanaged, didn't they, and dropped the ball there over the course of Christmas, New Year. But it's a situation now that you're more likely to get it than not. But for a lot of people, fortunately, they're not being seriously affected by it with the Omicron variant. But there are lots and lots of people getting it. I'm not even sure the numbers. In fact, I'm certain the numbers are not even accurate at the moment. There's a lot more people that are infected than what are actually being recorded because of the situation that they have to go through in getting it recorded. But the industries have stood up really well, guys. There was an instance at, we worked the morning of Boxing Day, Matt, and there were jockeys dropping left, right and centre as a result of close contacts going to Chris Caserta's funeral. And they managed to get, I think it was about 13 jockeys replaced at Caulfield that day. And since then, there's been little spot fires here, there and everywhere in all three codes, but we've managed it really well.
Yeah, no, it's amazing how racing has sort of gone about it. Even, we've seen with the cricket, the Big Bash players of Brisbane, is it Brisbane Heat? That's how much interest I've had in that this year. I think they lost half their team for one game. So yet again, the racing industry has been quite resilient to it, but it is getting kind of ridiculous, isn't it? Like the Magic Millions sale, which I was supposed to have attended, but I couldn't because I got it and my kids got it. I think it's going to be a super spreader event. The Magic Millions sales, looking at the footage of it, unavoidably so. I mean, I think this is the world that we're in now where we're basically going to be confronted with super spreading venues like the Magic Millions. So I think nearly everyone who's been to that complex this week, it's kind of hard to imagine that they won't have come out of it with COVID. So that's going to be something that has to be dealt with. And obviously, the big Magic Millions race day today and so on. But, it's been a bizarre period. And every year we've done this show and every year we get to Happy New Year for whatever year it is, we assume that the year that we're talking about is going to be better than the previous and the one before that. But this is now, Simone, who knows what the hell's going to go on now for 2022 with Omicron and whatever's next. So with the racing industries, all three of them just have to keep doing what they're doing, I guess, and just be resilient and careful and just keep going.
Well, that's exactly right. That's all we can do. And it's hard to plan too far forward, isn't it? We've really got to just live day by day, week by week, if we can. I just wonder whether us in the racing industry or the people who are hands-on with the animals have a bit more of a resistance. I'm sure there's people who have been mucking out stables and then having their lunch without washing their hands, an hour or so later. Or even, I just know what it's like. Sometimes you'll be, leading a dog around and then you must just build up an immunity because you're outside all the time with these animals and sometimes, you don't get a chance
to
wash your hands as much.
You're not going the early crow,
are you, Simone? I feel very fortunate that I have not contracted it yet. But then again, I've been not putting myself out there. Like New Year's Eve, I just went round to a friend's and, not trying to just be a little bit careful. It's a little bit hard sometimes in the saddlery. You have to be very diligent and make sure customers are are wearing their masks, and you're very aware that the next person that walks in the door may very well have it and not know. But I think you can control your own self to some degree, but we've all got to go down the supermarket and that. But maybe it's just the nice fresh air that a lot of us in the racing industry, you know, live in day to day. We're not stuck in offices all the time and in air conditioning. So perhaps we have been fortunate for those sort of factors.
Matt, you mentioned before you and your family have got it. So give us a rundown, and it's different for everybody. Everybody has a different immunity and a system, so it's not applicable to everyone. But I know so many people now, whether they're closely related to me, they're good friends, they're old friends, they're friends of friends, neighbours, just so many. And there seems to be a common denominator through the majority of those. So I'd be interested in what you, how it's affected you and how you feel in the last few days, because you are with the COVID at the moment, or have just got over that period, but certainly very fresh to you. So just give us a bit of an insight into it or not.
I'm the elephant man of the panel at the moment. The first person really close to me that I became aware of was my nephew, Sid, who got it, say, 2 weeks ago. And it was like, at that stage, it was sort of like, oh, God, someone's got it that we know. You know, there was that stage where not many people were getting it. And, it, you know, he's a fit 18-year-old, healthy, you know, no vices that I know of, or his father knows of. And it knocked him for six. You know, like, just flattened him, you know, basically. And then the kids and I went to Bright for a few days. And actually, this it'll take us to another little conversation about this thing we've been talking about lately about staff. Places we went to with the staff crisis. And then when we got back, I felt like I'd been hit by a bus, like just aching from head to toe, back, everything, you know, head to toe, and sort of just assumed it was me sleeping on a bad mattress. And then in order to go to the Gold Coast, Max, my youngest, and I, we had to get the 72-hour clear rapid antigen in order to go to the Gold Coast. So that was last Sunday. And Max had been feeling quite tired that day, and I'd been feeling just a wee bit out of sorts. And we took the RAT test, and both came back positive on the Sundays. And then the Gold Coast was out, and then Ollie tested positive as well. And so he's been quarantining with me. And just tiredness at unexpected times, pretty much, and shortness of breath, like even now, like a little bit shallow of breath, you know. So, yeah, nothing major. Like, you know, when you if you didn't have it, you'd say, oh, I'm just feeling a bit crappy, but mainly the shortness of breath and the fatigue and all that sort of stuff, but nothing for me. I didn't get the sniffles or the sore throat or the headaches or any of that sort of stuff, so certainly not an extreme case of it, I wouldn't say, nor were the kids. But David Manning, who we all work with, he was, you know, obviously double vaxxed like we all are. I'm not sure if he was triple vaxxed, but he had it a few weeks ago, and he was desperately ill, really desperately ill for 3 or 4 days. And so I think even with Omicron, which is meant to be the softer version of it, I think you're still going to get a lot of people who are, you know, who have a bit of an issue with respiratory-wise, I think, more than anything else. And I think that leads to fatigue as well. If you're short of breath, you're going to get tireder quicker. So, no, but generally, it's lingered a bit, I've got to say. I thought it would have passed day 3 or 4, but it certainly hasn't nicked off yet. So, yeah, so it's a bit of an experience. It's given me, after 2 weeks off, give me another week, which is, so there's always a silver lining.
Why does it put a smile on people's faces? I know a few people that are getting, I presume it's the Omicron variant, because it's not to say the Delta's not going around and that's why some people are sicker, but there's still a few people seemingly smiling by not having to go back to work because they've got COVID.
I've been Simone smiled, so she knows what it's like to take one as well. So I'll tell you one thing that, and Dan, when we were talking off air, you mentioned this, and Simone, I imagine that in your walks of life through the saddlery and the greyhounds and everything, just with community stuff with Darcy and so on as well with pony clubs. When we were up at Bright, everywhere we went, staff crisis, wineries closed, Miller Chocolate Factory, the cafe closed at midday on a normal Monday to Friday date, no staff. The staff crisis that we're talking about in the thoroughbred world of, you know, no track riders going back 6 months or so. It is incredible. And Dan, you were saying you've got one of your daughters is on the Gold Coast, and it's just a closed shop, isn't it?
Yeah, well, she works in retail, and so does her, her boyfriend works in hospitality, and their businesses were closed. I've heard a lot of businesses all through the strip in Surfers Paradise are closed. And it was making it difficult. We had an interview with someone last Saturday, Michael Felgate and myself, also talking about nothing being open on the Surfers Paradise strip. So they were greatly affected. And I don't think, because I've got first-hand experience with people up there I talked to, the Gold Coast problem, significant one, it was before it really erupted here, maybe a week and a half later or so. But the amount of infections, I don't think are correct. I think it's far higher than what has been reported in the Gold Coast, significantly affected. And, of course, it makes sense with so many visitors that were going up there. And in this instance, the amount of visitors that are coming from interstate to go to the Gold Coast sales, but it might be limited slightly, guys, because there are less places to go to. There were some pubs and clubs and certainly restaurants, and they were shut because they just didn't have the staff to be able to do that. So that makes it extremely difficult. And it's a problem that we'd been going through in patches throughout Melbourne for quite some period of time. But we know it in the larger cities that it's affected. You're talking about a smallish town like Bright, and you know it replicates all towns across Victoria or Australia for that matter, at least on the eastern seaboard.
Well, guys, I absolutely agree with you, but I think we need to move away from this COVID conversation to a degree, and let's get into some racing. And sort of it is related. I was at the Geelong Trots on Wednesday afternoon, and it was a bit like a reunion. Every second person was either someone that we'd had on the show or it was someone that comes into the saddlery. And Dan, I met David Murphy, and he was telling me how it had affected him and the band. They weren't allowed to play at Warrnambool on the weekend just gone. So it's certainly affecting everyone in different ways, but it really hasn't stopped the racing, has it? And I cast my mind back to December last year when I attended the Phoenix at the Meadows, and had that have been a week or two later, it would not have gone ahead in the capacity that it did. And must say the Phoenix was one of the best nights of greyhound racing that I've been to for a long, long time, probably because it was different. I mean, the Melbourne Cups and the Australian Cups are always sensational nights of racing. There's so much entertainment. There's a real vibe because you've got big crowds. But there was something a little bit different about the Phoenix, and it was an amazing atmosphere. It was a great night. There's a lot of people there and a lot of people in close contact, obviously, and high-fiving and all that when the Greyhound Welshies Fast ended up winning the Phoenix. It was such a terrific night, this whole slot concept of racing for greyhounds like we have with the Everest. It just proves that it's something that we really need to have, I think, to just elevate the racing game or greyhounds to the next level. Like, let's change the dynamic of what we've been so used to with traditional racing. And it really was an outstanding night of racing.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you mention that. I did a piece for Winning Post last week about how innovation, it's so hard to find innovation that actually works. You know, some stuff's just rubbish, you know, throwing gazillions of dollars at races and not doing anything else, not promoting them, and that just isn't enough. And I was thinking that after the Jane McGrath Day, the pink day on the third day of the Sydney Test, about every now and then something comes along that's got a great hook. You know, back in the newspaper days, Dan, it was the editor would always say, don't give me a story unless it's got a hook. And the hook for Jane McGrath Day was, you know, resonated, of course, through the universal story of breast cancer and so on. And it's become an amazing standalone day within a sport that struggles for innovation. It's a bit like racing. It's on, you know, it's quite, there's a relentlessness about cricket. And so Jane McGrath Day and Simone, you mentioned the Everest and the Phoenix. It's very, very hard to come up with something that truly engages and it's not just a gimmick. So it's great that the Phoenix has been successful because there's obviously something about it that greyhound racing needed or greyhound racing fans have latched onto that that has elevated it above everything else.
And I think the irony of the whole situation, you had the major sponsor who was sponsoring the TAB Phoenix and you had another betting company who won it. And I was with that other betting company for the night, and I have never cheered for a greyhound so hard in my life that wasn't one of ours. It was just an amazing atmosphere. They had merchandise there. We were wearing hats. We had stubby holders. It was just like one big happy family, and it couldn't have been scripted any better for the rival betting company that took out the Phoenix with Wow, She's Fast. But I was talking to, I can't think of his last name, but Shannon, who was the one that chose Wow, She's Fast months ago, and she was around about the $17 mark initially, and people had written her off because she was the youngest, most inexperienced greyhound of the field. And I had this feeling that she was not badly boxed in box four, and the colour four is the blue, and of course the colour of the rival betting company is blue. And it just, there were so many little things that married up, but it couldn't have gone to plan any better for one particular betting company. But let's take a listen now to the replay of the Phoenix.
They're racing. Aston Rupee jumped away okay, away fast there. Spotted Oak Delete certainly down. Koblenz Handy followed by Wow, She's Fast. As they turn to the back, Aston Rupee is about fifth in the centre. As they turn down the back straight, and Spotted Oak was the leader. Went down the back about three in front. Wow, She's Fast. They were followed by Koblenz, who's third. Over to the inside, then Jungle Juice, followed by Vice Grip, and then came Aston Rupee. Out to the tail is Billy Creek and Treacle Linda. Turning for home though, Wow, She's Fast takes over, and Wow, She's Fast is coming away to win the Phoenix. Second spotting out. Spotted Oak, and third is Koblenz, and they were followed by Billy Creek. Behind them then came True Kalinda, followed then by Aston Rupee, and out to the tail running Vice Grip and also Jungle Juice, and the time is around 29.69. What a run.
I'm a bit devo because we spoke to Calgarino about Wow, She's Fast. It was my favourite box, and she's been the most publicised greyhound, Dan, of the last 6 months or so because of the debut win and so on. So there was every reason in the world why we should all have been on Wow, She's Fast. Did you back her?
No, I didn't, but she was good odds on the night. She was well into double figures.
$6 or $7, wasn't it?
I thought she was 12 or 13 or something like that at one stage at least. But you're right. There was a huge boom on her after her debut win where she won. I mean, it sounds ridiculous. It was like 27 lengths or something like that, wasn't it? And we actually had a good chat and a guest on to talk about Wow, She's Fast on Cracking the Codes in the week that she had won. And I think that was only her seventh start. And when she took out the Phoenix the other night, which is just amazing to give away that experience to a wonderful group of greyhounds. So terrific story. And, it was much talked about. There's something about the Everest led the way. I still think the Miracle Mile, the old Miracle Mile, where they used to give out invitations, and Peter Volandi's involvement in the way the Miracle Mile and harness racing sold itself, and that led to the Everest. To me, that was the stepping stone. The Everest was created for what was the Miracle Mile at that stage. It was an invitation. It wasn't a slot race, but it was the next step forward. But there's something about those slot races that have really been working. And I must admit, I really enjoyed the build-up to the Phoenix. I thought it was fantastic. It was something that you really couldn't miss, and it was terrific for the Meadows as well. So, Matt, I totally agree with you. And harness racing are working on some slot races. There's one in New Zealand that is going to go ahead as well this year. But it seems to work. I'm not sure why. Most of the time I can give a reasonable answer as to why it works. I'm not sure why it actually works this time, but it's been embraced. It seems to be embraced by all codes. It's not just that one code. They're names of races that become familiar with people that are not just associated with that code where the race is held. So I think that's fantastic.
No, exactly. I'm a bit the same as you, because the Everest, the slot element of the Everest hasn't been what's attracted people to it. It's just been the fact that it's created the best race. You know, like, who wins the slots, whether it's some billionaire A, billionaire B, betting organisation C, star casino, whatever, that doesn't resonate at all with those who love the Everest, like I think we all do. It's the fact that, for whatever reason, it's been able to attract the biggest field, and I think that the $15 million, as much as it's sort of offensive in some ways, it's also such an attraction in some ways as well. It's this idea of this massive life-changing amount of money, and all of us, even if we're not competing, can sort of relate to, wow, whoever wins this is going to be set for life. So I'll tell you the other thing, though, Dan, that traditionally is always the hook in Simone, and it's always been the same with the great greyhounds, is when a champion returns, and we get that tonight, don't we, Dan?
Yeah, we certainly do. It sort of sneaks up, I think, on a lot of people. But A name maybe slightly forgotten because it's almost been a year. Lochinvar Art returns. He's first up tonight for almost a year in the Shepparton Cup. And his last start was the Hunter Cup. And through the course of the summer last year, he won on Vic Bread Night, which was just outstanding. And then he won the Shepparton Cup. So he is the defending champion. He had one more run after that race, and he won the Hunter Cup, and we haven't seen him since. So let's just remind us of this superstar that we're looking forward to seeing tonight winning last year's Shepparton Cup.
It's going to be a blast home here in this last half. Leader Lochinvar Art still held back to the field. Second, Reactor now. The young guns move to second, but he's under pressure. Bulletproof Boy on the inside. Third, tapped along two. Fourth, Sir Ledick itching to go. No Run Malcolm's Rhythm. Our Uncle Sam peeled three wide, pushed four wide on the home turn, and then Montigiana 27.5 down the back, and Moran hit the go button on Lochinvar Art, and he dashed away. He opened up with a big lead, fighting out the is Sir Ledick, our Uncle Sam, and along the inside, Malcolm's Rhythm, but it's all Lochinvar Art. He's a millionaire now, and Lochinvar Art goes on his winning way. The hometown champ wins by 20. Second, Malcolm's Rhythm. Third has gone to Sir Ledick. Fourth was our Uncle Sam. Mongiana ran a great race.
Hey, yeah, that reminds me, Dan, whatever happened to Ride High? You know, the big match race that was going to happen. What happened to Ryan? I know he got injured. What's the latest
yeah.
thing, you know?
Yeah, look, he was getting closer to a return and got injured again, so he's now been retired to stud. So, we go back and, you know, don't want to flog a dead horse. I don't know if that's the right expression to have in this instance, but at the time, what is dead is that opportunity that existed of that match race, potential match race of Lochinvar Art and Ride High. So that obviously will not happen. The only race that they can have now is who's the most successful sire. And Lochinvar Art, that's what he's been doing. He's been serving mares through the course of the spring. He's been prepared up in Sydney while he's been serving mares by the McCarthy family, and has come back down to David Moran in tip-top order. He's had a couple of trials. He looks the same horse. Had a chat with Dave during the week, and he feels the same horse. He's a little bit nervous, but just as excited to have Lochinvar Art back. So he's been a busy boy while he's been out and with injuries, and we haven't seen him for the best part of 12 months. It seems as if Lochinvar Art's come back with a smile on his face.
It sounds like he would have for sure. Hopefully he keeps his mind on the job tonight then as well. But, Dan, I'm just interested in this process of the Shepparton Cup. So, like in the Greyhounds, we would have a heat that, you know, you qualify for the final, but is this just a standalone race that trainers can nominate for? And how do you actually, you know, a horse that hasn't had form for the last almost 12 months, how does he take a place in the field then?
Well, it's a bit like having Roger Federer coming out. You're not going to put him in the consolation, are you? No, he is still... he's certainly the best horse in Victoria, and it's been 2 weeks short of a year, so I think it's, he'll always get a start, Lochinvar Art. Although some strange things have happened in the past, haven't they? But no. He's all good to go. He's in my eyes, the number one seed. Probably King of Swing is the other one that's vied for that spot with him over the last 18 months to 2 years or so. But no qualifications. There's very few races now where there's a heat and final of a cup. Obviously, the Inter Dominion's the most obvious one. But the Hunter Cup is the big one, and there will be other horses that probably even running second a Lochinvar Art will be enough to get them into the Hunter Cup in a few weeks' time.
Speaking of big ones, Magic Millions on the Gold Coast today is the big one. It's the big Magic Millions race day. And a resident of southern Queensland in recent times has become Ben Thompson, who's well known in really all of our spheres, Dan. I don't know if the Thompson family have ventured into harness, but certainly Jason Thompson and Shona with their terrific greyhound kennel. And obviously they're the parents of Ben Thompson. And you know what he did, Simone? He did what Dan and I would do. He followed his heart to Queensland.
Oh, we know Ben's a big softie. He takes after his mum, and so there's absolutely no surprises there that he followed his heart, but what a beautiful heart he has followed.
Yes, the beautiful Stephanie. So we're going to have a chat. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to have a chat to one half of racing's great love story. And we're going to go, and I did, Stephanie's going to join us in the next couple of weeks as well to give her interpretation of the love story, which may not be exactly the same as Ben's interpretation.
We might have to ask him a question. you know, what's your favourite colour and see what they come up with, the favourite movie, and just rank them on points and put the...
Because I did a feature story on him recently, and we will ask him this question. You know that really awkward one that I think a lot of people have been through when you've kind of been in a relationship and then you haven't seen each other for a long time and then you go and reconnect and you actually live together, and just those awkward moments of what if the bastard leaves the toilet seat up or wet towels on the floor or are we going to be stuck for conversation and all that. So Benny's going to take us through some of the potentially perilous reconnection stories, and then obviously he's riding at the Magic Millions with Stephanie. So we'll do this break on Cracking the Codes.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
That's what we're doing. And as we suggested before the ad break, one of the great love stories in racing. It's a tough game. You know, people go their own way and things get a bit testy. But Benny and Stephanie, it's just one of the most lovely stories. Benny followed his heart and found himself up on the outskirts of Brisbane where Stephanie had been for a couple of years, and now they're both having a wow of a time up there. And on Magic Millions Day, we thought it'd be nice to touch base with Benny Thompson. How are you, Benny?
Good, thank you, Matt.
Are you excited about today?
Yeah, very, very. It's come around quick, and obviously it's away from sort of the Winter Carnival and Stradbroke Day. It's the biggest day of the year. Well, obviously it's the richest day in Queensland racing, and fortunate to be going to the races with a nice book of rides and a busy day ahead. But looking forward to it.
Is it almost bigger than Stradbroke time now? I mean, I know that's the traditional carnival of Southern Queensland and so on. But everything this week's been massive about the Magic Millions, all the media coverage and the buzz and the excitement. Is this the time of year that mostly captures the imaginations up there?
Yeah, well, for mine and as yourself, yeah, without a doubt, it's such a build up. All the top trainers and top jockeys are in town, and it's just there's a real atmosphere, you know, amongst the week. Weather's good, we're right on the beach, and no other place you'd rather be this time of year by the Gold Coast.
Yeah, no doubt. Although a lot of the shops aren't open, are they, with the COVID sweeping through? But that's probably something we've all had to learn to deal with, Ben. You mentioned a lot of people coming from interstate. So in that case, you know, family, and obviously so you get some good friends that would be coming up that you would look forward to seeing on an annual basis now, and even the horses for that matter, because they're all Magic Millions sold, bar the ones that get the lucky free road in. They're horses you can be associated with for their entire careers. There's plenty of races for them.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It's and even this is the third Magic Millions meeting I've ridden at, but second since you could say being an adopted Queenslander, and it's plenty of the same horses that were here this day last year. Obviously, there's plenty of us trying to buy for those better rides and trying to get on them at the right time. And it's a real, obviously, it's something that's just went, a team's just gone from strength to strength as years have gone by. And we're all after the lucrative prize money. It's exciting, and hopefully we can sort of get in the winner's store today.
What's it like for those of us who haven't been to a Magic Millions race day? Very tight, sort of basically a provincial track, really, that has the grand stage status for this day, and apparently they squeeze them in like sardines, and so on. What's it like being at Magic Millions at the Gold Coast track on Magic Millions Day and competing there?
Yeah, it's a decent atmosphere. It's there's plenty getting up and about, and especially as the day goes on. It's the crowd can get pretty rowdy, but it's good, and plenty of fun. The club do a great job, and I know it's always just how it is, as sort of long before the meeting itself. Stephanie and myself, we have our families up here, and mum and dad, they're up here. They arrived last night, and this is their third Magic Millions Carnival, so they love it, and it's something they just share that's almost become a tradition now.
Ben, you've ridden in Singapore, you rode in a Melbourne Cup very early on in your career. So how does the Magic Millions atmosphere and the vibe there compare to those other places?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely as good a Magic Millions Carnival as anywhere else, Simone. It's, Singapore is amazing. They probably didn't get the crowd numbers that they would, you know, in Melbourne or in Brisbane, like obviously that's like the Magic Millions Carnival. but an atmosphere in itself. Yeah, I think it's without being obviously the races aren't of group status, given that they're restricted to Magic Millions horses, or unless you win a wild card into the 4-year-old and above races. It's every bit of a Group One day, and that sort of feel.
Singapore was one of the little top parts of the timeline of your career that took you and Stephanie apart, and Dan and Simone and I were having a bit of a laugh before we went to the ad break to mention that you were coming up after the break by talking about that awkward moment when you've been in a relationship with someone but you've been so far apart for so long, and then you reconnect and you're just not quite sure if the mojo's going to be there or if you're going to annoy each other or anything like that. And when I spoke to you a few weeks ago, you said, I think you're both a little bit nervous looking forward to the reconnection, but both a little bit nervous and just hoping that things would continue where they'd left off.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's obviously we managed to get through Singapore while Stephanie's still being in Australia. It was, I think, after like in something that we said once we sort of got back together, that, or once we'd been away for a few months, that in the back of our minds we're thinking, is this going to work? But thankfully it did, and yeah, I guess we've only been, I think, stronger for the time away, and. Oh, I guess rekindling when we're back sort of living under the same roof. Thankfully, things hadn't changed. So it's, we look at it now, sort of back to the time apart, as a positive. And it's almost made us in a way, but no, I wouldn't change that for the world.
Well, you're probably lucky in this day and age you had Zoom or FaceTime or the various applications where you can actually see each other still, because you go back only 25 years ago and you might have been in love, but it'd be through writing, you'd just be pen pals. So, you know, you're looking on the fortunate side of things. You could carry on a lot better by seeing each other over the last few years, if you're in Singapore, even in Victoria. And now then the COVID situation hit, so that probably even handicapped you a little bit, but at least you knew how to use Zoom.
Oh, absolutely, Dan. And it's that was a big saviour. And even now, obviously, with my parents still being in Victoria, don't get to see them often. It's sort of some substitute being able to see one another pretty much whenever you like. So, albeit on the other side of the screen. So, it's definitely a big help, and helps to be living in this day and age.
Ben, I find it interesting. You've grown up in a family, a greyhound family, where mum and dad have worked together and the business has been at home. And look, I'm in the same situation here, and I know it's not always that rosy. You can't actually leave work and come home and, have it out or whatever. You're sort of always in that environment. So it probably speaks volumes about growing up in a family with mum and dad that it hasn't scarred you, that you want to be with someone that you're in the same industry with and have the same circle of friends perhaps and have the same thing in common. So it probably speaks volumes about that.
Yeah, it does. It's obviously mum, obviously dad sort of got into the greyhound industry under his off his own bat and finished school, and then has been in the industry ever since. And obviously mum, her entire family sort of in the greyhounds. Her father was Ronald, an administrator, a grader, but basically a handicapper in horse terms, and then drove the lure and still does to this day. And mum's granddad, he was a track curator at Ballarat, so. Both have sort of been, entrenched in racing. And not one of those things that I really thought about, whether do I want to be with somebody that does the exact same thing as me. But Steph and I just sort of, stumbled upon one another. And, we clicked. So it's, I guess you could say, meant to be. And at the same time, it definitely helps having somebody that works on the same, around the same clock as I do. It'd be hard, I guess, being with somebody when every public holiday or weekend I'm busy, and if they're working a 9-to-5 job and give their time off, then it'd be hard to keep both of us happy when, say, she wanted to go out when I'm at work and vice versa. But we work together well.
Well, if you set the alarm for 3 a.m, your girlfriend may as well get up at the same time. That's my theory. So that works well for you. Hey, Dan, are you
That's why you haven't got a girlfriend.
Yeah, hey, let's not get personal. You know I'm unwell.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Are you a breakfast?
Simone, we know you're not because you're female. Men are obsessed with Google Maps. We have to Google Map everything. If you have a conversation with someone and say, where have you moved to, or where do you live, we always have to Google Map it. So, Benny.
I'm guilty of that. Very guilty.
Exactly you and Steph have moved to in Queensland.
We live in Rochedale, which is 20 minutes south of Brisbane.
Near Capalaba?
Yeah, that area. For the Mount, Capalaba, Mount Gravatt, that area, just off the gateway.
Somebody's been Googling maps in the last minute or two near Capalaba.
Well,
I wouldn't have known.
Identified for Simone, where they dragged the lure across the ground. So, they, you know, it's an identifiable spot.
Hey, Ben, just going back, you know, as you were growing up, you obviously had a lot to do with the greyhounds. Was there any special moment that you slipped any of the greyhounds or, you know, caught them or took them to the boxes, boxed a greyhound in a group one or some great story that you might have with one of the greyhounds or one of your favourites?
I'd say the most special, Dan, was handling a greyhound that Mum and Dad trained, got a moment, and she won a Melbourne Cup. That was really special. Dad had two greyhounds in the race that year, and I handled her in her heat, and then she ran again in the final. So that was really special. From the time I was 14, I was handling the dogs for Mum and Dad, and they were always sort of a big hobby of mine. But that was probably the most special, the Melbourne Cup.
Ben, I remember that night clearly, and I remember after Dad won the race and everyone was congratulating Dad, you'd actually handled her and everyone was over congratulating Dad, you know, well done on the win. And I remember you just standing there and you had tears in your eyes welling up, and I remember coming over and giving you a hug because you were left alone. Everyone just ignored you and it was all about Dad, and I thought it was just such a lovely moment. So let's relive it now.
Racing, Glengallen on the inside began okay with Got a Moment, going out fast, Asali Bale, followed by Haranyu Hitman, going into the first turn now, and down on the inside, Got a Moment, the leader from Asali Bale, Haranyu Hitman around the outside, they were followed by Glengallen, behind them then came General Destini, followed by Proven Nitro, Don't Knock Him, and tailing out Lyndon Magpie, coming up to the turn, Haranyu Hitman narrowly, Got a Moment, getting up on the inside, Glengallen peels to the outside, switches down the outer, Got a Moment in front, and Got a Moment's won the belt. And come, I'd say, from Glengallen. Heads everywhere for third. Proven Nitro, General Destini, Haranyu Hitman, followed by Don't Knock Him, Asali Bale, Lyndon Magpie, and the time is 29:36.
Well, Ben, we hope that replay brought back some memories for you because it's certainly very memorable for me. But getting to your riding career, Ben, I'm really interested. There's a little clip that came out during the week of you and Steph, and it was a lovely little clip, and she sort of had a little bit of a crack at you, I guess you could say. She had you in the dressage arena riding a horse in a dressage position, and she's saying, you know, you can sit on a horse, so that's a start. She was having a little bit of a joke. But when you look at Steph and her riding career prior to being a jockey, and also Jamie Carr falls into that category, and they were riding in a completely different style to being a jockey, but without being disrespectful to you, looking at you sitting in a traditional position, you just didn't look at home. You looked probably a little bit uncomfortable. And you've also mentioned that Steph's got very good hands, whereas yours perhaps aren't as good as hers. So can you just tell people that are probably wondering what I'm carrying on about and what I'm talking about, can you just sort of put that all together for us?
Yeah, I guess all about riding at the moment. It's so different. Disciplines, which you could say, between racing and doing dressage. To be honest, I think it's almost probably riding a horse properly, the equestrian side of things. Whereas riding one race day, it's more so, I guess, just trying to get them to go as fast as you can, you know, for as long as I guess and get from A to B the quickest. So it is quite different. And so in terms of it's just that not, you know, obviously each ride is different, and there's probably, you know, things that Steph, that I wish that I'd done certain things, you know, as well as Steph did, and probably vice versa, she wished, you know, perhaps. By saying that Steph has great hands, this horse has relaxed really well. It's still, like, every horse is different, and some horses that Steph and I have both ridden and relax better for me than they have for her, and vice versa. But just as a rule, horses switch off for her, and she says, yeah, she's what you see with, like, you hear the term often, they're a lady's horse or whatnot. And I don't know, there's just some things that some horses that get along with, and it's like no different to dogs. Like, some pets and or some of the greyhounds prefer, for whatever reason, it's whether it's reading into it too much or not, they seem to go better when Holly handles them, or my mum, than they do when Luke, my brother, or my dad handle them. So it's, yeah, it's one of those things, but we both have, yeah, different attributes.
Well, that shows the true professionalism, Ben, of yourself, and also that what you've learnt off your parents, because, you know, some people don't read into the nuances of the dogs that closely, and you're right, they do sometimes go a little bit better for a lady or a man. It's just, I guess, everywhere in life, things gravitate towards one species or gender more so than the other. But I was also going to ask you, I'm sure you've looked back at lots of champion jockeys over the years and you've watched the way they ride, and you're talking about hands and things. Do you think that in this day and age you are trying so hard to find an edge that you really have to perfect your skills more? Or do you think that the riders back in the day were such great horsemen in a different way that their riding skills were perfected as well?
Yeah, there's obviously there's like superstar jockeys from back in the day, which, you know, people still talk about, your Mick Dittman, Darren Biedman, Ron Quintons, and so on. But it's probably one of those things. I guess it's just a different game now, and you know, those jockeys back then, if they were in this day and age, they may have rode different. I guess at the same time, where now it's like there's nowhere, international races and whatnot, they're still seen, you know, so easily. And we probably, like, we watch Hong Kong and the Breeders' Cup carnivals and whatnot in America, and you know, the Royal Ascot, it's all so coveted now, and it's probably jockeys, you know, we're looking for different things that those ones overseas do to, you know, maybe adopt here. So it's yeah, I think obviously you can't entirely compare eras because it's like racing. I mean, the game's a lot different now than what it is then.
Hey, Benny, how big is Tony Gollan up there? I mean, we're used to Mar Eustace being just massive here, and Weir before that, and Waller in Sydney and so on. But Tony Gollan seems to be bigger than any previous big Queensland trainer. Is he super dominant up there day to day?
Yeah, he is. And obviously, like, he's on top of that, he's got the highest amount of numbers of any Queensland trainer. But in saying that, like, he plays these horses to perfection, and his attention to detail is as good as any leading trainer in Melbourne or Sydney. He runs a tight ship and yeah, gets results for a reason, and that's the way he places them. And yeah, just the work he puts into his horses, does a great job, and gives you a lot of confidence riding for him.
Been a good chat this morning. I think Matt, his plan is to get Steph on in the next couple of weeks. So if that's the case, I'm going to ask you a question or two before we go. What colour eyes does Steph have? 2 seconds to think about it.
Benny, do not fuck this up.
Okay, just put me on the spot here. I'm
going to
say green.
What colour did you officially say? What was your answer?
Green.
If they're blue, you're in a world of trouble. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, this is going to open a can of worms. You'll be back in Singapore before you know it.
Who's the neatest, you or Stephanie?
We're both pretty neat, but me. It's me. I'm definitely the neatest, I'd say.
What's the best dish you or she cook, and what's the one that she absolutely butchers but she doesn't know it?
Best dish, I would say, is she makes a good, really good broccoli bacon and a great roast. Worst dish, no comment.
There is one, but
he's a smart man.
Hey, mate, good on you. Hey, it's a good story. Yeah, everyone, you know, it's very difficult in racing for relationships to sort of stand the test of time against distance and so on. But you guys are going great, and it's been a terrific move for both of you up there, and your careers are absolutely flying. And today's a big day, so well done, and ride safe today, both of you. And look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it.
Ben is a fine young man. I've known Ben all his life and known the family, and he's always been like a wise head on young shoulders and a very respectful young man. And I've always said right from the get-go when he was looking to becoming a jockey and going out and doing his apprenticeship that I think he'll win a Melbourne Cup one day, and I hope I'm right. I will stand by that for the whole entire career that he has racing, because he's just... he's just one of those people that hasn't got caught up in a very successful family with racing, and it's never got to him, got to his head. He's just remained very, very grounded, which is a testament to his family life and upbringing. So thoroughly enjoyed talking to Ben, and I did meet Steph at Ben's sister Holly's 18th a few months ago when we dodged restrictions and we were able to get together, and she's an absolutely lovely, stunning girl as well. So a glamour couple for sure in the racing industry. And I'm sure there are some others, but I do not fit into that category at all in the greyhound. So, guys, have you got some others that you can come up with?
Darren and Simone, Gay and Robbie. Robbie's off the same way, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, well, I think so. Yeah, they're the Brangelinas of greyhound racing. Yeah.
What would be the shortened version, and would it be... Damone, I think. You would connect them up.
Oh, this is getting terrible. Who came up with that silly thing? We fall far from being a glamour couple in greyhounds. I can give you the big tip. If you saw us in our everyday life,
I just thought of one that would not pass what are the people that stop you, tell you can't do things because it's a bit rude?
The fun police.
There's one with Gay and Robbie that if you merge them together would certainly not pass, but you'll have to think that one through, but I can't actually say it. So Gay and Robbie is one. Gay Waterhouse, Robbie Waterhouse is one of the great couples. And Shona and Jason, Benny's parents, I think, Simone. Dan, I think the All-Stars is one of the more famous couple pairings, aren't they, in New Zealand?
Well, yeah, at the moment, I suppose they are. They both started off with different pairings, though. So,
well,
does that count?
Or... And repair, if you, you know. If that's
yes, of course, of course. Yes, absolutely. Well, there's plenty of them, and to be, it's rather unfair to not have the time to prepare and have many others, because there's been others that may not be in the spotlight that are even as successful, or anyone. Actually, why do you say that, guys? Now that you've brought it up, and this is relevant to me, but today, the 15th of January, is my 27th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. Oh,
Tanya, you poor thing.
Yeah, you got a feel for it, don't you? But so I want to nominate. I want to know. Want to nominate the Tan Dan relationship there. But obviously, we know who the one is that kept it together for all that time. So a significant day, which is good, and we celebrate it by doing the things that we do, probably having a bet and a drink. And well, Tanya won't, but I will on her behalf.
Yeah, no, exactly. Hey, when I was away, it was sad to read of the death of Rick Lacey, who was a guest of ours. I can't remember exactly when it was. I know Craigie played it on our best.
February 2020.
Yeah. And
in the lead-up to the Australian Guineas.
Yeah, do you recall that Rick was in a care facility in Springvale at the time? And it was, and I think COVID, there was going to be a catch-up, but COVID got in the way. And he was in reasonably good form, I thought, that day. You could tell that he was... suffering. I think he developed a form of dementia, but he held it together really well for that interview. And he's a guy that I had a lot to do with throughout my career, right back to the Epsom Red Brick stable days, and then to Caulfield where he had the loft on top of the stables. You know, and look, there are elements of Rick's life that were very unsavoury. There's no doubt about that. But in an overall sense, he was an incredible individual chapter in the book of racing for Australian horse racing. His eye for yielding, Dan, and his unusual methods.
Yeah. Stallion making.
Yeah. But he was, Simone, and I know you enjoyed that chat with him, and he was a classic character, wasn't he, Rick Lacey?
He sure was, and I must go and re-listen to that interview, because sometimes when a bit of time has passed and you go back and revisit some of the guests that we've had, you pick up so much more because you've spoken to other guests and things can relate back. And I was talking to a girl from Riding Club the other day, and she's actually got a horse who's Byra Doot's choice. So You know, that legacy lives on, and I just remember him taking Redoute's Choice down. Is it Mortialik Beach? Was that Mortialik? And Jamie Ennis, a great, very well-known greyhound trainer who's tied up with the harness racing as well, and he used to take his standard bred down there that he was trying to train in his little old beat-up horse float and car, and he said, you know, who was standing on the beach? But here's me with my horse, and there's Redoute's Choice with Rick or Lacey. So I clearly remember that part of the conversation and what Jamie had said to me as well. And yeah, like you mentioned, Matt, there's some unsavoury parts for sure, but... sometimes we do need to just have a look at the impact that people have had on an industry and in a positive manner as well, in, you know, particularly with the horses. And I think that's what many people, including myself, would remember Rick or Lacey by.
Well, his interview was replayed last Saturday. So if you're looking at the podcast and may well have missed that one, you only have to go back to last week. Otherwise, it was February 2020 in the lead up to the Australian Guineas, which he won a few times. Had some wonderful horses, Spartacus and Kenny's Best Pal, and a few others that probably escaped my mind. But I tell you what doesn't escape my mind is some of the jumpers that he had in Diwali and Fast Food and Kaimoto. They were some of my favourites going back in the 80s and the 90s, and they were just super duper jumpers. So could train a stallion, Group 1 on the flat, and also at the top level in the jumping caper as well.
Hey, Simone, we've got to wind it up. But something that you did a bit of a road trip this week, and you came across a statue in a town on the way through Gippsland, and that might be a good little theme for us in the future, is statue-worthy horses, greyhounds and participants. Give us a little teaser, and then we might flesh this out in coming weeks.
I was driving through the town of Sale back towards Melbourne, and I just spotted, I think it was near the information centre, a statue of a horse, and it was too quick. I'd gone past it before I realised. So trusty Google, of course, Googling statues in the township of Sale. And it was a horse called Petrobus that won a Melbourne Cup. And it may have been around 1930, maybe
1915.
A bit earlier.
1915.
There we go, earlier. So I
Given
thought that I will...
1930, it was going to be a tricky one.
Was it 1930 for Farlap? Oh, was it 30? Yeah. Oh, that's why I had that in my mind, of course. You know, I'm not a numbers person.
But he was a famous name, so yeah, let's do a bit of research.
I'm going to try and track down a family member of the owner, because I did do a little bit of reading about the lady who owned this horse, and I thought that might be my little mission, to find someone who knows a little bit more, because obviously he was a very, very worthy horse to have a statue made out of him. And as we know, Gundawindi, and is it Pure Steel or Paleface Adios, Dan, that there's a statue made out of as well, one of the harness
in Tamora,
horses.
Yeah, in Tamora, yeah. There is the great horse, Paleface Adios, the Tamora Tornado, they nicknamed him. Petrobus wore all rose pink colours. They were his colours that he carried in 1915. So there you go. Look forward to learning more on the job that you've got at hand on Petrobus. We can learn more about it too, hey, Matt?
Indeed. Guys, we've run out of steam. We've run out of time, and I've run out of steam. Hey, it's been great to catch up. Let's do this more often. Let's do it this time next week.
Okay.
Sounds good.
It's a date.
See you next week.